I'm absolutely delighted this evening to welcome you to a very special event. I have the honor of introducing our speaker. My name is Fred Logevall, and I'm here this afternoon in my capacity as director of the Mario Einaudi Center for International Studies here at Cornell. I'm also serving as vice provost for international affairs, and I'm a faculty member as well in the history department. And I'm so pleased, as I said, to welcome you to the 2014 Bartels World Affairs Lecture. And just a special thrill for me to see such a great turnout today. I'm just so pleased by this. Those of you who are on the bottom floor know, and our guest will say something about this, know that you have a special task today, which is all I'll say at this point. But it's good, therefore, that I think virtually every seat in the bottom part of the auditorium is, I think, filled at this point. What I want to do is introduce our guest and then get out of the way. Let him do his thing, and in a while you'll see exactly what I mean by that phrase. But I first need to express heartfelt thanks from all of us here to Hank and Nancy Bartels, who with their generosity have made this series, this fellowship possible, makes it possible for us each year to do what we're doing here today. Hank and Nancy were not able to be with us tonight, but their granddaughter, Katie, is in the audience. Katie, could I ask you just to stand up for a moment, please? We're so grateful, Katie, for everything that the family does to make this possible, and it's great to have you with us here this evening. More than 30 preeminent thought leaders have been part of this fellowship series since its founding, and I think if you have a program, you can see the full list. But I want to say here that since 1984, we've had, for example, Archbishop Desmond Tutu. We've had His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama. We've had President of Chile, Michelle Bachelet, and we've had Luis Arbour, former United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, and former President of Brazil, Fernando Henrique Cardoso. And it's a much longer list, as you can see. And this year's fellow is, I think, a most worthy addition to this illustrious group. Dr. Hans Rosling is an internationally renowned medical doctor, academic, and statistician. He is a global health expert with an extraordinary aptitude for bringing data to life, and his work offers astute observations of broad social science and economic statistics presented in ways that bring clarity and focus to the discussion of the world's health and poverty trends in particular. Here's just a capsule biography for you. Following studies in statistics, public health, and medicine, Dr. Rosling became a licensed physician in 1976. He traveled to northern Mozambique to serve as a district medical officer. And there, in 1981, he discovered an outbreak of Kanzo, which is a paralytic disease. And subsequent studies of the illness resulted in a PhD from Uppsala University in 1986. He then spent two decades studying incidences of Kanzo in rural areas across Africa, tracing its cause to hunger and badly processed cassava. Of this period, Professor Rosling once said, and I quote, "My experience from 20 years of Africa is that the seemingly impossible is possible." Subsequently, Hans Rosling has dedicated his career to understanding health and poverty inequality. His research has explored the links between economic development, agriculture, poverty, and health, and his co-authored textbook, Global Health, an introductory textbook, is widely utilized by students around the world. He has also served as a health advisor to the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and other agencies. And he co-founded the Swedish branch of what we call in this country Doctors Without Borders, or Läkare Utan Gränser, in 1993, the Swedish version of that organization. He went on to co-found, of perhaps a particular interest to us here today, the Gapminder Foundation in 2005 with his son Ola and his daughter-in-law Anna. And they developed Trendalyzer data visualization software, I don't know what it is either, to explore the latest data on the world's most important trends, including population changes, income distribution, health status, and use of resources. Trendalyzer's bubble animations, some of you are familiar with these, and innovative graphic representations of data has changed, I think, the way that we look at global trends. As professor of international health at Karolinska Institute in Sweden, Hans Rosling has implemented health research collaborations with universities really across the world, and that's important. But no less so, I think, has been his determination to proceed from the conviction that access to global data presented in an easily understandable format can directly influence not only how we think about pressing issues, but can in fact influence policy and planning. This is one reason he has been instrumental in helping us to better understand our complex global society, in the hope that we can then better address the most pressing issues before us. Now, somebody asked me this morning if, with I think a little bit of a wink, but with some seriousness, if Professor Rosling's nationality had something to do with this invitation. He's Swedish, I'm Swedish. So I want to be absolutely clear this afternoon. Det har inget med saken att göra. Att han är svensk och jag är svensk. Ingenting. Understood? Now, the word is that he came to us today from our nation's capital, where he stopped off en route to Ithaca to advise lesser lights such as Secretary of State John Kerry and other senior officials. And as I understand it, he can elaborate on this if he wishes, but he initially declined on the grounds that he had to get to a very important destination, namely Ithaca, New York, to Cornell. He was then told that Secretary of State Kerry would make a special appearance, and he relented, but then said, I have to be right on my way to Cornell. He arrived, I think, last night in Syracuse after midnight, has been going all day long, and we're so thrilled to have him. Named one of the world's 100 most influential people in 2012 by Time magazine, our guest is a celebrated public speaker whose TED Talks, you're all familiar with TED, his TED Talks are among the most watched TED Talks of all time. I sense that we're about to find out why. The title of this evening's lecture is Upgrade to a Fact-Based Worldview. Ladies and gentlemen, Hans Rosling.
It's a true privilege and a humbling experience to be invited to this university. I have been working a lot with nutrition and agricultural development in the poorest parts of the world, and have had several different collaborations with scholars from Cornell over the decades. And so I had to meet the expectations. So I decided to have this humble title on my presentation. There will be nothing about space whatsoever. I will leave it completely. I will only deal with the world. But being a professor at a teaching university, I will start by putting you questions. Because we have set as a target in Gapminder Foundation, which is a startup coming out of Karolinska Institute, we only have a teaching purpose. We want to have results. So I would like to put some questions to you here. This is the first question here. And sorry for you up there, we didn't have enough response card, but everyone down here has a response card like this. and you are only going to use the upper three bottom, which is A, B, or C. And I ask you, what is the life expectancy of the world population today? Someone born in the world today, how many years are they expected to live if things remain as they are today? Will they live 50 years, 60 years, or 70 years? A, B, or C? Please answer. Ooh, they are fast at this university. They're really fast. Now it slows down a little. Here we are. So let's see there. Let's go to the next question. Thank you very much there. And I go here to the next one. Where do the 7 billion people live in the world? I divided the world into four regions of the same size. America, Europe, Africa, Asia. Do they live like this? 2 billion, 113, or is it 1114, or is it 1123? Choose A, B, and C. Where do the people live? Okay, thank you. When I was born, 1948, there were less than 1 billion children in the world. Children here being 0 to 15 years old. Then, during my lifetime, the number of children increased to more than double. And by the end of last century, it hit almost 2 billion. Now, one of those three lines is the estimate made by UN Population Division. And be careful. That's a very good scholar group, led by John Wilmoth, who had the chair, professor of demography at Berkeley, who left Berkeley to go and join this group. So they have made an estimate that the number of children will continue like one of those three lines. The other two I just made up. Those are fantasies to make a quiz. Do they say, the experts, that the number of children we have to expect that they continue to grow like this to almost 4 billion? Or do they say, no, it will slow down, it will be about 3 billion? Or do they say, the number of children stopped growing, there will be no more children in the world? A, B, or C? Please answer. How many babies are born per woman in the world, average? The technical term is fertility rate in the whole world. It used to be 6. When I was a student, started a freshman student, it was 5. How much has the number of children per woman fallen in the world? Has it fallen to 4.5, 3.5, or 2.5? Please answer, A, B, or C. You. Now, basic vaccination are very important for kids to be able to grow healthy and survive. One of the most important is measles, and that should be given before the second birthday. What percentage of the children in the world today get this vaccine? Is it 20, 50, or 80%? A, B, or C? Several countries, many countries in sub-Saharan Africa, are facing challenges. What has happened during the last 20 years with child mortality in Africa south of Sahara? It started up with 18% of children dying before age 5. Has it increased like this? Has it remained the same? Or has it fallen like this? A, B, or C? Oh, I should have told you, we have very high ethical standards at Gapminder Foundation. We will not collect any DNA material from this afterwards. So I see some worrying faces here, you know that. There will be no personal identifications. The proportion of people living in extreme poverty, that means barely having food for the day, in the last 20 years, has it doubled, remained the same, or fallen to almost half? Now, men in school, men above 25 years of age, they've been 8 years to school on average today. How long have women in the world been to school? This is about the gender gap in education. If men has been 8 years to school, have women been 3, 5, or 7 years to school? A, B, or C? What percent of the world energy production comes from solar and wind today? Is it 1, 5, or 10%? Okay, thank you for that. So, now I have to do something very exciting live in front of the public here. I have to mark everyone like this. I have to go to slideshow and to unhide the slides. And you do like this, and then you do like that. That's relatively good for a 66-year-old man to be able to do. How long do they live? Well, when we ask the Swedish public, Gapminder is starting an ignorance project. We are making randomized... When results improve, we will call it knowledge project. But that was the result of the Swedish sample. Randomized sample in Norway showed this. It's web-based, and this is UK... And this is United States. And you answered like this. You look like Swedes. That's not very advisable in this, because this is the right answer. This is the right answer. Now, if we go to the zoo and ask the chimps, they will get 33% correct answer, wouldn't they? Yeah, you're smiling. You are scoring worse than random. If you score worse than random, it means that the problem is not lack of knowledge. There must be some preconceived idea that stops you from reaching random. Isn't it? Let's look at the next. This is where people live, you know? And this is what you answered. This is like... Ooh, this is a warning. You look like Swedes. This is Norway. This is United States of America. And, sorry, I didn't have... So, we do like this again. You were there. This was Sweden, Norway, United States. Now, the right answer is B here. B is right answer. Here you beated the ship. Congratulations. This is B. But almost half of you, almost half here think it's like this. This means that you overestimate the population in Africa with 100%. It's very strange. It is the only question where audiences and professionals think that the world already is as it will be 2050. So half of you can relax, no problem in Africa, there's half as many as I thought. It's interesting. The only thing I know is the correct answer. I've only chosen question where there's no doubt about what the correct answer is. And if it's uncertainty, the difference between the alternatives are so big, so they take care of the uncertainty. So here it's really a lack of knowledge. It's a perception that there are much more people in Africa than they are, you know. And then someone overestimated America also. But it's interesting that that's mainly done outside. No, even the random sample there did it. No. Let's see how it is. If this is the world, we divided it in four parts. And note, please, that we added Turkey and the whole of Russia to Europe. Otherwise, Europe becomes so insignificant. It's so small. So it's the only chunk. And I decided that Australia finally have to adapt to be Asia. You know? They have to get used to it. They have to get used to it. And we are 7 billion here. One in America, one in Europe, one in Africa, and four in Asia. This is how we are. Now, from 2012, 2050, what will happen? No more in Europe. Very little more, some more retired people in South America, but in Asia, 1 billion more. And by that, the Asian population will stop the fast population growth. It may continue to grow slowly, or it may even start to decrease. But the fast population growth is over. And by 2050, yeah, then you have your 2 billions in Africa. Then up to the end of the century, 2100, no more in America, Europe, or Asia, but it will be 1 and probably 2 billion more in Africa. Africa will increase its population 3 or 4 times in this century. This is not so strange. This is what happened in our country also. Just that 1/4 then left and went to Minnesota. And then it became full in Minnesota, so some of my folks went on to Oregon, you know. And we don't see the comparison of that, you know. Now, if I split this in North and South America, I split this in East and West Europe, I get what I used to call the Old West, the old concept. That's why the Industrial Revolution, the benefit, the success of the market economy and democratization started. That will be in the future. It will be less than 10% of the world population. When I was a freshman student, it was still almost 1/3. It would really fall in proportion of the people, you know. And 80% of the world population will live in Asia and Africa. This is the slide that the CEO of the biggest companies in the world love. I do lecture at the highest level in corporate and financial sector, and we charge obscene lecture fees so that we can finance the free website with that. It's one of the modern... And they pay nicely. And the shocking thing is that they are really interested. I have to say, I have been astonished how the CEOs of the leading big companies, Procter & Gamble, Pfizer, you pick them. They are very knowledgeable about the world. They know economy, they know energy, they know environment, they know population, they know... They just have to. Otherwise, their companies will fail. So they love this because they say this is the future of trade is Indian Ocean. Atlantic Ocean will be backwaters. This is a big identity change for West Europe and North America. Now, what will be the future? The future of America will, of course, be the great institution like Cornell University and all the academic institutions and the research. You know, Hollywood will make it into the future, I'm convinced. Music will still come from here, you know. Great innovation will come. But it has to adapt to a completely new world. Where the sizes are different. I will come back to the money on this. But can we trust this data? Well, in 1958, United Nations Population Division made the first forecast of world population. And they said we would hit a little above 6 billion by 2000. They went 42 years into the future. The media said it was ridiculous. How can you even think that there will be 1.3 billion people in India? That is impossible. Every intellectual person knows that that is impossible. Now we know the result. Respect for demography. And I'm not a demographer. I'm a medical epidemiologist. And you know how much in advance we tell you about the new epidemics, you know. HIV or Ebola, you know. No, it's up. It started this week, we tell you. And the economists are even worse, you know. So demographers really can tell you, we have to adapt. We are going to feed 1 billion people in the world. We are going to feed 10 billion. I will show you why that is so. It can't be nothing else. Now, this is the question here. What did you answer here on this one? The Swedes answered like this. Norwegians like this. British like this. United States like this. And Cornell University. The number of children in the world have stopped increasing. It's the biggest event in the history of mankind that was ever completely missed by media and educational institutions. And tell me why, I don't understand. It's a major, major change. And we missed it. I think if I may speculate, this is just pure speculation. When we talk about the world, we are full of emotions. We are optimistic if we are entrepreneurs and investors. We are pessimistic if we are environmental or human rights activists, you know. And we are sort of ideological. We say free market, or we say no, social welfare, you know. So we don't learn about the world, the macro things about the world. You study parts of the world, aspects of the world, you're good at that, but the macro level, we just miss it out, you know. This is number of births per year in the world. 2014 is the highest number of births in the world that is predicted by UN Population Division. Of course they are not perfect. There's an uncertainty. It may increase a little. It may decrease, you know. But more or less, this development is over and it's going like this. And we've missed it because we've been obsessed by total numbers. And we just say total numbers, oh, world population is going like this. But we don't start with facts. This is the problem. Let's see here how good you were. It's 2.5. It's dropped. This is where Paul Ehrlich wrote the population bomb. And then it's done. No, it's still uneven. I will show you how uneven it is. You know? But we are down to 2.5 children per woman. The number of kids have stopped increasing. And this is because of the following. You know? In Europe, it started up here and it fell down like this. It fell slowly and gradually all the way, and now it's below 2, below replacement level. The Americas, everything together, the hump in the United States of America and also in South America, actually, post-war, a baby boom, and now down to 2. Asia went on like this, it scared Paul Ehrlich, and then this happened. Quite amazing. And these numbers we know. This is not doubt. We have very good data of fertility rates. It's quite easy. You do a survey, you do a census, you come to a house, you knock the door. Door open, kids come out to look, and you count them 1, 2, 3. It's very easy. To do a survey of death rates in the family is very delicate. You know, to understand poverty rate, incomes, is very delicate. Ownerships of land, human rights, not to mention violence against young women. We will never have any good, reliable statistics on rapes. We have to rely on other sources of data. We cannot be obsessed that we need numbers on everything. Some things we have to act upon without numbers. But this we have numbers on. And this is happening in Africa. Is something changing? Yes. It's on its way down, and all experts agree that this will happen. We just don't know how fast will Africa fall and at what level will we end up. Those are the two things we don't know for sure. But the big transformation is almost through. How can we know this? Well, in the past, 200 years ago, 400 years ago, 2,000 years ago, humans on average, two parents here, they got on average 6 children, and 4 died before growing up to become parents themselves. Sadly, tragic. The only place today you can find societies like that, where is that? Well, beside tragic war situation like Syria or anything like that, which hardly even would reach this, it's the remote parts of the rainforest. So don't ever say that people in the rainforest live in ecological balance with nature. They do indeed have an amazing knowledge and care about nature. And their human rights should be respected. But don't say that they live in ecological balance. They die in ecological balance. Human beings have kept dying at young age throughout thousands of years, hundreds of years. It's been a miserable life. The worst thing in your life is to arrange a funeral for your child. Huh? You should die in the order you were born. That's how humans want it. And this has been the situation. Now, when the emigration started from West Europe to North America, it was not that we started to get more kids. It was that more children started to survive. Many wrongly think that things got worse in Europe. That's why immigration started. No, it's the opposite. Things got better. More survived, and there was no land. And we couldn't increase the yields on the agriculture. Food insecurity came, and you had to move out. This is what happens, and then you got up to the 7 billions today. Now, when you see this curve, and you see you hear this speech, many people still today use the ugly expression population explosion. I would advise you, as an ethical and good university, stop using the X word. It's very ill perceived in populations where they have a fertility rate which is high. It's telling that someone else's loved child is a terrorist bomb. The whole concept was that this was the bomb of Asia, that Asia was going to throw bombs of children. It's actually basically structural racism behind that term. Don't use it. We have a very neutral expression, population growth or fast population growth. Don't call others' children bombs. And don't say that it's an exponential growth. People just want X in their headlines. Is this an exponential growth? Here is an exponential growth. Faster and faster and faster and faster and faster until then. Then it's linear. You know the meaning? Yeah, they laugh because they know math here. Congratulations. Yeah? The peak of population growth in the world coincided with Paul Ehrlich's publication of Population Bomb. It was 2.1%. Since then, it has been falling steadily. It's now 1%. The total growth of the world population. And this means, and if you put $1,000 in a bank account and it will grow with some amount of dollars, same amount of dollar every year, you know that the interest rate is falling. If the interest rate remained the same, you get more and more and more and more dollar every year because they get the interest on the interest. That's not happening. So already here, you can spot that this is being solved. But people use this emotion. There are too many people. There will be too many I didn't say that, you know, but people think like that. Too many Africans, and they think this will happen. This is not what is happening. When I lecture to hedge fund managers, they look at horror with this line. Hedge fund managers hate things that go linear into this. They want exponential the whole time, otherwise they move their money, you know, because they are so greedy, they know exactly what it is, falling interest rates. That's the worst thing that can happen. And in fact, this is what happened. We have almost reached the two-child family. 80% of world population live in societies where two-child family is the norm and the average. It's just that we don't teach it. It's just that media don't tell us. India today has 2.5 children per woman, and 9 out of the states in India with 500 million people have 2 children per woman and less. 2 states of India has lower fertility rate than United States of America and Sweden. The big transformation has happened in 4 out of 5 places, where 1 out of 5 of human beings who live in society that still have high fertility rate. It's not finished completely, but it's enough to stop the population growth. This is what will happen. We know more or less that this will slow down. Because if the number of children stop growing, have you seen any immigration from outer space? Do you believe in that? Some people do, you know, but most of us don't, you know. And I think especially at Cornell University, there are not very many who believe on that, those sort of things coming from outer space. This means that the only thing that will increase now is the adults. From now on, it's the adults. And how come that we are so good? Well, we are doing things good, that kids. Child mortality has fallen. Look here. When Swedes answer this question, Norwegians answer this question, here answer this question, and at Cornell, yeah, you were like this. This is the right answer. Half of you think that 20% of the children of the world are vaccinated, and it's 82%. And then you want to discuss if foreign aid works. Stop it. Don't discuss, learn. Learn first, you know? If you're going to sell a product, you work in business, you don't do like this. You start discussing, is this soap selling well? Is this shampoo selling well? You look at your results first. We don't do that when we talk about development. It's too emotional, it's not fact-based. It's sad. is very successful. Foreign aid is very successful. Otherwise, Bill and Melinda won't give away all their money. Because they are very smart, obviously, because they couldn't get that rich if they wasn't very smart. And when you give away your own money, you're sort of careful, aren't you? Huh? If you're a civil servant giving away tax money, you can have suspicion. No? And then Buffett comes along, you know, and hands over his money to them because they do so well. Huh? This works. Now, of course, there's some corruption. Of course, there's some things that are badly spent. And that's always. As Bill says, you know, 80% of all startups, software startups, go bankrupt within 3 years. Should we stop investing? The results for aid is much, much better than that. Much, much better than that. It's not perfect. This works. The problem is, you don't know. This is what has taken down child mortality. No? Let me look at it. This is what has happened in Africa, south of Sahara. Sorry. You jumped up. 45 was this. This was 34. And this is what the Swedes said. And this is what the Americans said. Here you were more knowledgeable. Because the right is this one. Child mortality in Africa, south of Sahara, is falling as fast as it ever did in West Europe and North America. Great success. Education is there now. Educated women know how to use the mosquito net that aid helps to provide, you know. Huh? Breastfeeding is better promoted, thanks for research, greatly contributed from here in Cornell. Huh? And things are just better than they were before. Huh? And let me show you in our beloved bubble graph here. Every country is a bubble. Size of bubble is size of population. This is China, this is India. Color is continent. Red, Asia. Green, America. Blue, Africa. And yellow, Europe. And the year 1963, 50 years ago. Size of family, 2, 4, 6, 8 children per woman. Large families, small families. Child mortality, low child mortality, 50 per 1,000, means 5%. Still quite high and tragic. But at least lower than 100, 200, 300. Some countries had 1 in 3 children dying. 1 in 3 children dying before age 5. Huh? And then you can really see that the world was divided in 2 types of countries. The division into developed and developing countries was very relevant and highly intellectual at that time. Because you could see that there was one group down here. This is Japan, of course, United States, Australia, and New Zealand, you know. These are European countries. What is this one? It's Cuba. It's an enormous rhetorical success of Castro to nominate himself as leader of a group he didn't belong to. Neither did he belong to this one. That's why they were so frustrated, the young students in Cuba. Because there was a regime who kept their country backwards. Huh? But they were really one of the few intermediate. The next one here is Singapore. There was some sort of intermediate country. Otherwise, there was just 2 groups. What has happened? Has child mortality fallen? Has family size fallen? Vaccination was up to 83%, you know. And as I tell you, aid is working. Not everything, but most of it. Huh? Now I start the world, and you can see for yourself. And these are both good numbers. I told you why we have this number, child mortality, we have due to the federal taxpayers in the United States of America, Demographic Health Survey. Surveys made every 3rd to 4th year in countries where you interview 3,000 to 5,000 women about birth histories. Huh? This we have, a big group of 50 qualified people north of Washington who compile this and make it freely available on the net, added by what UNICEF is doing. You know? So we know that this is quite accurate numbers, and here we go. Ready, steady, go. 64, 65, child mortality is falling. China is a little jumping like this, then they go for smaller families. Family planning in Brazil and Mexico, they don't care about the church. They use the condom, they move on here. Here you have Iran, Islamic Republic of Iran. They're coming, and African countries are coming down here. Look, here is Ethiopia coming. The whole world is changing. It's a completely new world. The average number of children per woman is 2.5, and you thought 3.5. You're more or less 20 years behind time. Many of you fresh students here, you think the world is as it was when you were born. So even India down here. Now, this is due to China because China has this one-child policy. Everyone has heard about. No, China has 1.66. How come? The big, mighty Communist Party say, thou shalt only have one child. People are not obedient. The Communist Party doesn't have that much power in the bedroom. They may have it on the Tiananmen Square, but not in the bedrooms. People make their own choices, their own decisions. But can you then explain to me why Taiwan has 1.26? Taiwan never had a one-child policy. And you can find others who are even lower here. Singapore has 1.2. Hong Kong has 1. Hong Kong never had a one-child policy. How come? Well, I understood that when I was lecturing at one of these investment conferences. And I ended up at the dinner next to one of the most successful young bankers in Hong Kong. She was only 37 years old. And she knew everything about financial markets in Asia. She taught me so much. And was just admiring her and realizing she has been working day and night since she graduated. So at the dessert I asked her, do you have a family? Oh, no, I never had time for that, she said. Don't you want to have a family? And then she looked out of the window into the moonshine in the night, and then she said, yes, I'm thinking about children every day. It's the idea of a husband I can't stand. The Vice Prime Minister of Singapore came in October last year to Sweden with a group of 12 experts in economics, in sociology, in demography, and they wanted a study visit 1 week in Sweden. And they have asked for it. I was invited to give the first lecture at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And she said, the Vice Prime Minister, really, really knowledgeable woman, she said, we only have one question. How do you make babies? Because our countries are surprisingly similar. Same economic level, same social system, same good child health, same access to family planning. Yeah, we have historically and culturally we are different, but we are similar in so many ways. And you make 2 kids and we make 1. What's the difference? And we can afford, to have a maid from the Philippines. There's no problem, there's no limitation on that. And it ended up, I tried to explain, and there was other senior person. In the end, it was the youngest female desk officer who explained it all in her summary. She said, try gender equity. Try gender equity. Because in the success parts of Asia, you have economic success, you have educational success, but you don't have gender equity. The young women are still supposed to stand back for their husband to take care of their parents-in-law. It's not the gradual process that has happened in West Europe and North America. It has not yet happened. It seems as gender equity is a fight of its own. And then you get this low. So at the same time as we are still concerned about Afghanistan and Congo having high fertility rate and growth of the population, this still exists. There's still countries which have problems. Of the women in Africa south of Sahara who want contraceptives, only half of them get it. And it is as if the whole aid community, the whole community forgot the need to complete the access to contraceptives. And we have to accept that this has to be done. At the same time, so many governments are worrying here. Look at all these countries who have sub-replacement levels. That's why we have no growth of children, because some countries are decreasing the number of children at the same time as others are growing. Let me show you how this works. First here now, to get it right, Ethiopia has come down there. What a remarkable change in Ethiopia. Very determined now to provide child health contraceptive at basic level. Government make their effort, community make their effort, aid organizations are there, and Bill and Melinda can't honor them more than they are doing, how they are working. And if I split Ethiopia into its province, it looks like this. Addis Ababa is here, 1.6 children per woman, 4 million people, very modern city now, emerging, you know, with very capable people. And Somali region, that tragic civil war on the border to Somalia is up there, but most of them are here somewhere in the middle. Now, the reason why the world population is growing in the way it is growing is the composition of the population today. And I've devised now a more modern teaching tool that I will reveal for you here tonight. It's not digital, it's analog. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the world population. Each role is 1 billion people. And there are 2 billion below age 15. 2 billion children. Remember you saw that? 2 billion children. This will not increase. There are almost 2 billion 15 to 30. There is 1 billion, little more, but more or less 1 billion 30 to 45. 1 billion 45 to 60. And then 1 billion 60 and above. Here you see one representative of this role. No? This is what we have in the world today. Why are these missing? Is it because they died? No. A few of them are missing because they died. Most of them were never born. Because back then, in the 1950, when I was born, there were much fewer women giving birth. So even if each woman gave birth to more kids, there were fewer women. That's how population grew. It keeps growing, 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 until the number of children stop growing. Then you have to fill up. And what will happen is the following. Now, I know that the medical faculty here is in New York City. So, but is there someone here who knows what happens to old people? They die. Now they are gone. What happens to you is that you will grow older and there will be children. The old die, the rest grow older, they get children. The old die, the rest grow older, they get children. And whoop, you have 3 billion more without increasing the number of children, without increasing the length of life. 3 billion with the inevitable fill up of adults. I see that some of you doubt. But if you have this back home this evening, you can check yourself. It's very convincing. It's very convincing. Now, the good news for the old one is that life is indeed getting a little longer, but that will just add 1 billion. This is longer life. This is fill up. And this is what you have to know. You have to know this. You can't discuss like, oh, the population is growing, so they're having too many kids. Aid doesn't work. This is wrong. And the worst of all is that we still have sort of young students who say, well, if you save the life of the poor children, you destroy the planet. It's the most common protest that Bill and Melinda meets. It's the most common mail to The Economist when they write about global health. It's the most common mail I get from young students. What about the dilemma between saving the planet and saving the children? It's over. We have soap. It's over. The countries where population is growing fastest in the world today is Congo and Afghanistan. You understand what that means? The countries with the highest child mortalities also have the highest population growth. They have 5 children born per woman, 1 die, 4 survive. 2 parents get 4 surviving children. They double in one generation. And as the people in population division say, fertility runs the show. The bedroom runs the show. The number of children born that decided. So we have to get fertility rate down. That's what it is. And we don't have to do it for environmental reasons. We have to do it for the family's reasons. But families want the number of children they can take care of themselves. So what has happened about with poverty? That's your answer. This is the Swedish answer, this is this. Yeah, you don't stand out here. This is the right answer. Poverty is going down like this. It's difficult to measure. Maybe the number of people is not so impressively going down, but the proportion is going down. Now, people who get out of absolute poverty, they don't get into welfare. They have a life which is very risky and they may fall back. But it's definitely going the right way. And that is why they no longer lead, less and less of the children, people in the world need their children as labor. And this is what it's all about. If these two young girls are going to carry water, the mother wants to have more girls that carry water. Some has to carry firewood, some have to take care of the goat, some have to do everything else. Look at this woman, Mrs. Tapo. She's an entrepreneur, she has a company. She transports waters, 1, 2, 3, the girls can go to school. Is it because she runs organic farming? No. She enjoys the benefit of the Industrial Revolution. Iron in a wheelbarrow, rubber tire, you know, and she's proud. There's a name there, you know. This is before tap water, you can have this. It's increasing people's productivity, is what it's about. Increasing working hour productivity. And what is then the determinant of fertility? You have to get down to two-child family, get people out of extreme poverty, get girls and women into school, see that the children survive, give them contraceptives. Because you have to provide them free for the poorest people. They can't afford to pay for it. Market won't solve it. Political commitment is needed. And indeed, its rights for women has to be improved. But rights without service is hypocrisy. You can't just have rights, you know, if you can't get the pills, if you can't get the injection, if you can't get the IOD which you want. And value change among the males is important. The men in the world has to be proud about how their children are doing, not how many they have. This is the value change. But it comes together. It's not one of these that drive. This is a package that comes together. And it comes with this change out of misery. And this woman, I spent all those decades, 2 decades in Africa, looking at extreme rural poverty, and this woman summarized it all. She was one of the interviewed in qualitative research in Malawi. She's on her way to a market here. And she says, school was number one for me. Now I can count, they can't cheat me at the market. That's crucial. If I couldn't count, I can't trade. Health is important. Now I have my healthy child here. Thank you for the mosquito net that aid paid for. Thank you for the vaccine that aid paid for. But also thank you, government. Because the nurse you trained and the nurse you paid was the one who instructed me how to use that mosquito net and was the one who gave me that. Aid doesn't do things on alone. It just helps governments and people alone. And now I have a healthy child, I can go there, you know, to the market. Infrastructure is wonderful. Tarmac, we poor people, we love tarmac. I can move faster and longer now. You know, my rights are important. My good husband works in the city. So I'm alone in the village, you know, while he earned money so we can build a better house. And rights is indeed important, and cell phones are lovely. Because now I don't have one my own, but we have one in the village and we know the prices on the different markets. So I know when to harvest and I can get better payoff of my effort by this, you know. And agrotechnology, yeah, she says. Help me to preserve the rainwater. How shall I do to get better planting materials, you know. And credits are nice. Credits helped me to buy this bicycle. Now I can pay off the credits much easier. If I would have walked to sell, to then buy the bicycle, it would have taken me 15 years. Now I could get the credits and I can pay it back in 2 to 3 years. So when you talk about alleviating poverty, you have a pet action, don't you? If you are sort of in business, yeah, credit will save it. People don't have access to credit. If you are more like ethics and so on, you know, rights, it's human rights, it's all about that. If you're a little leftish, health for everyone, you know. If you're a little liberal, you say, no, schooling is good, you know. If you're an engineer, you want cell phones or you want tarmac, you know. She wants it all. And one of it potentiates the other. One of it potentiates. It's not that you can pick out one thing. It's rather the one which is lacking that determine how far she can go, how fast she can go. And she's going to the market, but she don't want to be a small-scale farmer. Who the heck want to be a small-scale farmer? Except the one who can grow organic product and sell to high prices in rich countries. Because then you say sell metaphysical product, not real physical product. You know? Then you can earn. Then it's nice to be a small-scale farmer. And perhaps that's nice. We give a nice surrounding to rich cities and then make people have other values. I'm nothing against it. But I don't want to be naive and tell poor people. The most organic farmers I've ever met was in remote parts of rural Africa. They were default organic. They couldn't afford 1 gram of pesticide or fertilizer. It just had to be organic. She wants a job. She wants to get employed at the textile factory and get a paycheck regularly. That's what she wants. Come invest, she says. Come invest. Huh? And she has a dream, fertilizer and electricity. And not just solar power, please. I want a mill. I hate to pound the maize 1 hour every day like this throughout my whole life. I want a mill, switch it on. And I can play with my child. That's much better. She's longing for the Industrial Revolution. She's longing for it. Then the Industrial Revolution brings with it its own problems that has to be solved. But she ain't the one who's going to solve that. She wants to benefit. How much did you know about how women went to school? This is what you said. This is what Swedes said. When you're close to Swedes, you know that you're in problem. You know? This is the right answer. Primary school is not that different. If you listen to Malala and not just admire her, you would hear her saying, when Kim, the head of World Bank, asked her, why are not girls going to school? She would take a deep breath and she said, because so many girls and boys live in so poor families that they have to work and they can't go to school. And then she took one more breath and said, but there are still some communities where there are cultural obstacles for girls going to school. But that's not the main thing. Of the kids who are out of primary school today in the world, 60 million, 45% are boys. Women do go to school. It's one of the most amazing results of the last 20 years. Activism works. Women rights groups works. And this is not like they've been allowed. Now they've been fighting for it. Their mothers have supporting them. Women's groups in the village have supporting it. Wise politicians have supported it. Now it's done. Is gender problem now solved? On the contrary. It's almost tougher to be 14 years old, having gone to primary school, and then being stopped in life, than to never have gone to school. It's almost tougher. What is the main cause of death for young women, 15 to 19 in the world? Suicide. That tells it all. Young women at the age of 15 today face an enormous obstacle in life, and they know that they are capable because they've gone through school today. Don't think that they don't go to school. They do. There are so many countries where girls and women go longer to school. The best example is Qatar and United Arab Emirates. There's several years more of schooling for women than men. Because women are stopped from doing other things, but they can go to school and university, and they graduate and they get PhDs and everything. But men, they get sort of lazy because they can flip out at an early age. They have a gender problem the other way around. It's changing. The world is changing. We have to follow it. You know. I jumped that one. Philip Rashaw. I'm going to show you this thing in more detail. If I take 100 million, I split each of these roles into 10. And I get 100 million there. I have 200 million in Europe below 15, 200 million, 200 million, 200 million. This is me up here. I live in Europe, I have above 60. Oh, I'm one of those 100 millions up there. Europe is boring. America is almost as boring. You just lack the retired people up there. Look at Africa. Already today, there are more people below 15 in Africa than the entire American Europe together. Start in Argentina, sweep up through the United States and Canada, go all the way across West Europe and Turkey and Russia all the way to Vladivostok, and you have less below 15 than you have in Africa. So that means that if these ones grow up, let's assume that by magic, tonight, you get 2-child families in Africa. Every one of these replace themselves with one more. You will still get twice as many in Africa. Can you see? They will grow up. These are the ones that were never born. In Asia, it has stopped increasing. Remember the line of Asia came all the way down. It has stopped increasing. So what will happen is this, you know. The old die, the rest grow older, and you get children. The old die, the rest grow older, and you get children. The old die, the rest grow older, and you get children. The old die, the rest grow. It's not so difficult, you know. and they get children. 2085, the fill-up of adults, the 3 billion I showed you, more or less. There will be some older up there. But the interesting thing is, the number of children stays the same because the African children increase. Because there's still extreme poverty here. And the Asian children decrease because it's gender inequity. If you're sort of scared of the number of people, the main threat is that you get gender equality in Asia. You remember her looking out, thinking about children, couldn't stand the idea of her husband. Is a nice man comes around, you know what will happen. Huh? It's just, you know, nice men are in short supply in this world. So that's why you get low fertility rates, you know. What does it mean? What does it mean? Let me show you income. Let me show you income. Yes, blunt money now. $1, $10, $100, purchasing power. 1969, this is Asia. Most people had just a little more than $1. That was the most common. This is Africa, this is America, this is Europe. Can you see it was two humps? One hump, two hump. I call it the camel world, with two humps, rich and poor. Almost as the dots, the bubbles showed you when it was big families, high child mortality, small families, low child mortality. How has this changed? Well, it has changed very distinctly. The tragic fact is that the poorest haven't disappeared. But the population growth have happened together with an economic growth. Can you see big Asia there? And the hump disappeared. And we get a dromedary world with one hump only. And then there's one side here, and there's one side here. This is more or less how the world looks like. We could also show it even more clearly and bluntly. 1968, Cultural Revolution in China. China was here, United States of America was here. People in rural Mississippi overlapped the leaders of the Communist Party in China. Otherwise, there was almost no overlap. And then this happened. Here they come. And we just have data to 2010. You see, most of the United States population can be found in China. Actually, if we would have run this up to 2014, every American has one Chinese with the same income today. Then there are all these people also. And you see, even if you go rural Mississippi, you still have people who are so much poorer in China. That's a big challenge that China is facing. Now, in trying to understand what this means, you know, here. Perhaps we should be more concrete. If this is the income distribution, I will replace it by the 7 billion people. Make it really, really rough. The poorest earn $500, 1,000, 2, 4, 6, 8, 16, and 32. That means it's a doubling. Between each billion, there's a doubling. The world is logarithmic when it comes to income, not when it comes to population growth. Bedroom, you know, is behaving different from paychecks. Paychecks are still distributed. This means that these poorer people have to double 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times. If you grow with 7% per year, without population growth, it takes 60 years. You double in 10 years. But when you have population growth, it takes 15 years. So it's about a century. For the poorest to reach United States level is about 50 to 100 years. But it's ongoing because we have that growth. Now, what about consumption? These people have open fire today. They don't have electricity. They cook an open fire. They light their house. The second billion have a bulb. Over here, they have refrigerator, they have washing machines, they have all necessary and unnecessary consumption goods. And they fly on holiday. And here they have a bicycle and there they have a motorbike. Now, what about energy here? Let's see what you said here. Solar and wind. You were relatively good here. This is the truth. 1% is solar and wind. About 40% of you severely overestimated the amount of solar and wind energy. This is the second question where you overestimate where you are in the future already. The number of people in Africa and the percent of solar and wind energy. Yeah? One you want to happen, the other you're sort of scared that it has already happened. Yeah? Let's look at the energy. This is how much oil the world consumes. This is how much coal, and this is how much gas. This is nuclear energy. This is bio and hydro, the old renewable, firewood and hydroelectric power. And this is solar and wind. I used a stupid voice for you to remember, not to make joke. Solar really have the potential. Scientifically based solar energy has an enormous potential, but it hasn't been transformed into something that is competitive economically yet. So how is this distributed? How is this fossil fuel consumption distributed? How much do the richest 1 billion take? They take half of it. The second richest billion, how much do they take? They take half of what's left. Now you know what the third richest billion take. They take half of what's left. And the fourth take half of what's left. And the fifth take half of what's left. And the sixth takes half of what's left. And the seventh gets what remains, and they have a kerosene lamp in the village. If population increase here, it won't matter for climate change. The problem is over here. This 1 billion, which is mainly the Old West. Mainly the Old West. The good thing here that it doesn't increase any longer. United States of America, West Europe does not increase, but decrease, no. The only one which has managed to decrease what has happened during the last year of President George W. Bush, it was the economic crisis. The economic crisis, Lehman Brothers had a greater impact preserving the climate than any other action done. This is sad because that had severe side effects. So many people had to leave their homes, so many tragedies. This is not how we want it to happen. But this shows, what are these people? These are the Chinese who bought the Volvo company in Sweden. First the American bought Volvo, Sweden had identity problem, now the Chinese got it. So we turned west and then we turned east, you know. This is Brazil, this is Turkey, this is soon Indonesia. These 2 billions are the ones which will add emission in the next 20 to 30 years. It's not these people over here. Don't think developing world. Developing world doesn't exist. It's an old concept when the world was divided. And this idea that developing world increased the emission, you just not looked at the numbers. It's the second issue. And then you can't stand up there and say, people, some people stand up there and said, you cannot increase your consumption because you will destroy the planet. How would you feel standing down there in Indonesia with your kids and you have just earned money enough to buy a refrigerator and an air condition? And then someone, activist up here, tell you not to do it. Watch my video, The Magic Washing Machine. How many here is it that regularly hand wash your bed sheets and jeans? Hands up. We had one in Stockholm University. He was on the first row. But around him there was a hollow of empty seats. So see, you all use washing machine. You own a washing machine, you rent a house with a washing machine, or you go and get commercial access to it. Everyone in the world wants a washing machine. There you have the answer. Everyone wants to reach the washing machine. Now that means $10,000 per capita. Can we have an environmental friendly washing machine? This is what the CEO of Electrolux says. I lectured at the corporate meeting, the internal meeting they had, and I'm allowed to share this. He said, we are going to make the most environmental friendly washing machines ever seen. We're going to make them much less energy use, much less water use, and with much more friendly, environmental friendly chemical. Because, why would we do that? Because I know regulation will come. That's how business change. And that's how wise business leaders do. They don't use their money to do stupid lobbyism. to continue carbon dioxide emission. They use the money to make investments to meet the regulations that will come. But without regulation, without scientific studies, the things you pursue here, without wise decision by government, business will not adapt. So this is more or less what you can see. So where are the child deaths? The child deaths are up here. And when I put them down, they happen there. These are the people whose children are dying. This is where you still have large families. They are not causing the emission problem. Burning fossil fuels save children's life. That's the fact. Now we have to live in a way which is better over here. Here the problem has to be solved. The emission problem is here in the United States of America for two reasons. Number one, you have among the highest emissions in the world per capita. Number two, you are the best entrepreneurs, innovators, and scientists in the world, and you can provide solutions. We hope for that. Thank you very much.
I think that was an absolutely marvelous lecture, and you know, there's a cliche we use, which is a speaker has given us food for thought while we've got a veritable feast. One consequence of the lecture and of the amount of information we received is that we don't, alas, I think, have time for Q&A. We do have some time? Okay. I've been corrected by the boss. That in fact we will have some time, a limited amount of time, for some questions. And what I would ask you to do is to use the mics. We have one on this side and one on the other side. We're going to be swift, and so therefore what I would ask, because we also have a reception to come, and you have an opportunity there, I think, to continue the conversation, I would simply ask, as I often do, that you keep your question and make it a question. Keep your question very brief, and I think what we're going to do is we're going to take perhaps... Well, let's begin with a question right here. Yes?
Can I add one thing?
Yes.
I also like protests and comments. I did severe simplification to paint the picture of the world. I may have got it wrong, and this is a scholarly group, either publicly or afterwards or on Twitter, wherever, defame me, tell me that I'm wrong, you know? Because this is needed. This is needed. You should doubt what I say. But I've tried to keep what is solid defense. But do protest if you see so.
Capacity. So how would advancing our population to 11 billion, does that have a very negative connotation, that exact number? Because it seemed like 11 billion wasn't a number.
Can I answer directly?
Sure.
So what do you want to do?
Oh, I have no suggestion.
No. It's a stupid statement by those researchers. You can't stop it. You have to kill people. It's not allowed. It's forbidden even to deny Holocaust. Even worse if you proposed one. They haven't understood demographics. There's no way you can stop those 3 billion from being added. Forget it. Plan for 10 billion.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Hi. My question is regarding the exceedingly large proportion of young people in Africa that will arise over the next century, and I was curious, what types of initiatives do you think can be are crucial to helping develop, you know, the next generation of young Africans that will be vital to the continent's success?
Three things: job, job, and job. You see, what you see when you get out of extreme poverty, you get some stable family size and so on. Parents make great efforts for education for the kids, and then they don't get jobs. You destabilize the nation. You destabilize the nation. You see the problem in Syria. You see the problem in Egypt, you know. People get very frustrated when they have worked hard to study and they can't just get jobs. This is the next challenge. When you get out of extreme poverty, you get two-child families, you get training. Sometimes they are trained, they don't have the right skills. But imagine those countries. Huh? Here, let's take Egypt or Syria. Let's take Syria, straight up in Syria. That was Senegal. And that's even those who have come further than the African countries. You know, Syria in 2014. Can you see? This is below 15 to 30, 30, 45, 45 to 60. The number of children stopped growing in Syria here. But now the number of 15 to 30 grows. And you can imagine the number coming into the labor market compared to the number going out of the labor market. It's a five-fold difference, five to ten-fold difference. You need to expand the economy. You need to expand working opportunities enormously. Otherwise, they'll get very frustrated, as every one of us will do, especially if having a job and earning money is what is required to be able to marry and to have sex. You get very frustrated. No, I say sex in the best sense of the word, love, intimacy, you know, someone to share your life with. If you are banned from that because you don't get a job in spite of having studied, you get frustrated, and any Islamic front that comes around, you will join it. Or any Sereno Luminoso or anything that comes around, you will join it, or fanatic organization. You have to get jobs for these ones. But that is at one stage. In remote parts of rural Africa, you first have to get child mortality down, family size down, primary education. We have to think about different levels, you know. And then when you have fixed the job, when you are at Thailand's situation, you are at that, then you must have stability in the society. You must have higher education, innovation, and so on. But first, child survival, education, and family planning, and basic infrastructure, then job. So invest. And Africa is in that situation. The front of Africa is already there. The front of Africa is already there. So at the same time in Tanzania, find one part of Tanzania, 20%, 40% of the population, almost 2 to 3 children per woman now. Education is going up like this. People are studying hard. They need jobs. At the same time, you have some remote parts of the rural areas that don't even have health service, that don't even have schools yet. So this is it. And that investment, you want it to be resource clever. I hesitate to use the word sustainability. Because I saw a study 1 week ago that the proportion of words that is composed by sustainability in articles and texts about the world, it's increasing so steeply. So by about 2032, all words in those books will be sustainability. So we will just say sustainability. Of course, the concept is right, but it has been overused. It has to be relatively clever. But the main problem, as you ask, is not the increase of people in the poorer end that is an environmental problem, the climate problem. It's in the richest corner of the world. It's in the richest corner. It's the unwise consumption in the richest part. And there is no way the richest part of the world can consume and produce in a way that cannot be shared by 10 billion in the end of this century. And those companies that will find more clever way will also be the successful companies. That's interesting. When I talk with the CEOs in the big companies, they have no problem with this. It's just the innovation. So they need jobs.
Thank you.
Let's go over here. Yes.
I had a question about the energy graph you had on the last slide. What do you think the potential is for nuclear power to help reduce...
A little higher.
Sorry. For nuclear power to help reduce our fossil fuel consumptions. Can you talk about that a bit?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know. I mean, the only thing when I listen to scientists is say, solar power is enough. Yeah? You take a map of Africa, you print it on one sheet like this, you put the thumb in Sahara, the sunshine that hit your nail is enough for mankind. It's just that we need the innovation to transform it. And there's a problem that how much can we subsidize it to really make it work? I don't think we can subsidize it so it works. It will be too costly. We need the innovation that it becomes cheaper. We need the storing capacity. And it's quite sad, could I say sad? This is not fact-based, this is a personal statement, to see that the democracies in North America, Australia, and West Europe are not as capable as is the Standing Committee of the Politburo of the Communist Party of China to plan ahead. We just have to bow our head to them, not accepting any of the violation of human rights that they are doing. That's another thing, but we have to see the two sides of what China are doing at the same time, you know? And they are really planning. They have the highest educational level of all heads of leaders of states. If you pick the 200 most powerful people in China, they have higher education than in any other country in the world except the Vatican. But they have PhDs, you know, and are professors in theology, all of them. So that's sort of different. You know? And China do lack, they should have had some more humanity, they should have had some more social science in the leadership, which may be their weak point, you know. But I can't see that we will achieve this without innovation. But we've had great innovation before. So basic science has to go run, applied science has to run, investment has to grab it, you know, and successful things have to be scaled. When Europe then put import tariffs on solar panel from China, that is stupid, short-sighted politics, you know. When putting up a solar panel provide as much job in putting them on the roof and as it is to produce them. There's so much short-sightedness in the policy of West Europe and North America that you get sad. Because I love democracy. I grew up being willing to die for it. I admire what America, I can't thank enough what America has done in the world to protect democracy. And then there were some stupid wars also, but most of them are great sacrifices, you know. But and now it doesn't work. It doesn't work efficiently.
Hi. This question makes much more sense when I was in my seat, but as I, like, throughout your presentation, it seems like, you know, the people that we are dealing with are changing, and it seems like if we want to help the poor, if we want to do something, we have to make sure that we are job creators and things like that. And I'm a first year PhD student in international nutrition, working with food security and things like that. And I was wondering, if I want to help my people in Indonesia, am I in the wrong major? Should I change? Should I be a business person and change? And because that seems to be like where my country is going. Or maybe like a smarter question, as a person in international nutrition, what kind of things should I make sure I do as a researcher?
No, your question is very good. It's very good. Because your country is amazingly in doing well. This year we are saddened by what happens in Iraq and Syria. We are shocked by the Ebola virus. But remember the election in India and Indonesia. Huh? The Indonesian society and country showed themselves mature to move into a new stage of its development. And people in the investment and business, they know this. The richest person in Sweden, he said to me, the one who understands Indonesia wins. It means that China and India, you know, but all these other countries coming along, Indonesia is quite successful. And you have managed to expand basic service in education and in health. Family planning is there. Indonesia has now 2.3 children per woman. Philippines have 3. No, using the Holy Quran is no problem whatsoever for developing your country. You can respect that faith and that religion, and you can still modernize within it. You know, there's no limitation whatsoever. Indonesia is the proof. It's the biggest Muslim country in the world. And what's happened, they also have this amazing young talent now, which developed very high. This is noted. It's not generally recognized in the public, but it's really noted. And it's a country, when you don't see so much in the news, the country is doing really well. you know, when you don't read about. And I can understand that you don't know what to do, and I don't think anyone else do. Because your country has graduated, you know, from the first level, jobs are there, you are now in for very fast economic growth, but the agricultural sector will be very, very important. And the way to go out and boycott oil palm production from Indonesia, when you yourself emit 4 to 5 times more carbon dioxide, it's a shame. It's a shame. This talking about climate problem and blaming others that do small things, you know. When you said, yeah, you go and you get that oil pine, you diversify the production, you know, and you get the rainforest to produce and to be in a way, sustainable way. That's why you can use the word sustainable in its true meaning of the world. You must have forestry, you must have agriculture with high productivity and that preserves the soil and preserves the environment, no more firing, you know. So you're doing well. We just want to have advice from you. Watch Indonesia, you know. If you are depressed about the world, follow Indonesia and Indian election. Very interesting.
So we have time for one last question. As it happens, we have this gentleman here. Make it a good one. Last one.
Oh, the other ones are very good.
It's in a similar vein. I just want to thank you, first of all, for being such an inspiring and elucidating figure in the work you do. And it ties very much into the previous question in that it seems that a lot of energy in a lot of the elite universities in what you call the Old West are being focused increasingly on pre-professionality. On pre-professionality, on a lot of jobs that work on moving value around in that world, but not in spreading it or marketing it to places where people don't have, there's not a valuable market. I would ask, there's an inspiration in your talk, and there's a reason to do it that isn't money or something being lucrative, but I'd ask how could universities and how could the corporate recruitment world that will take up most of the university's youth reframe the problem to address, you know, the 11 billion people that will be living here and that we will kind of die seeing?
Think for yourself. This is an opportunity when you are in university. You have those years, whether you are undergraduate, you are postgraduate. Think for yourself. Don't think about the career. You have to have that exam. You have to have that PhD to impress on your mother-in-law and so on. You know, that's another thing. Think for yourself and really be critical. Be critical to corporations. Be critical to government. Be critical to activists. Activists sometimes, you know, are not fact-based. They also have an organizational interest in what they do. And this whole idea that people is the problem is wrong. People is not the problem. People is a constant. And we can find solutions. The Nobel Prizes that we award in the Swedish Academy of Science have rarely, if ever, gone to someone who had an idea after the age of 35. So how many years do we have to go? How many years?
A decade or so.
How many years to 35?
16.
Good. Use those 16 years. Think for yourself. Don't think too much for the career. You can do great things, you know.
Thank you so much.
Now, this is not the cell phone. Your subconscious, you know, intuition tell you that this is a cell phone. I have to put it in my pocket. It's not. Please return it, and we will have people who collect it on your way out.
Before you go, folks, just a couple things. First, the comment about age 35 is a sobering one to many of us in this room. But
how old are you?
34, actually. So, I want to thank you for enlightening us today and for being here at Cornell. It's been a marvelous opportunity for us to learn from you. We have a small gift and a certificate as this year's Bartels Fellow that I want to present. There is the certificate. I don't actually know what's in this bag.
Let's look then. I'm curious. Oh, I got a box which you don't know what is, but it's gold on the outside. Okay. Thank you very much.